It's good to see everybody out this evening. I invite you to open your Bibles with me to the book of Ruth. It's been a while. I was looking at my file. I think we left off in November, and it's March. So we're going to try to finish up the book of Ruth tonight. It's just a helpful reminder for us, I think, especially in our day and time. As we see the context, and remember the context of the book of Ruth in the time of the Judges. This is a dark time in Israel's history, but this is a really bright spot during a dark time. And again, I just think the book of Ruth reminds us how possible and how important it is to be a light when the world around us is getting darker and darker. Of course, in the book of Judges, at the end of the book, spoiler alert for tonight, genealogy here gives us a rough time estimate. This is likely near the end of the book of Judges that we're going to see the lineage of David at the end of this book. So just a brief refresher back from chapter 1. You remember Elimelech and Naomi, a Jewish couple from Bethlehem, have two sons, Chilion and Mahlon. And they end up, because of the famine, fleeing to the land of Moab, where they take Moabite wives, Elimelech passes away there. And then they take Moabite wives, Orpah and Ruth, and in the process of their time there, both Chilion and Mahlon pass away, leaving just Orpah and Ruth. And when things get better back in Jerusalem, Naomi says, look, y'all stay here, I'm going home. But Orpah decides to return to Moab, but Ruth sticks with Naomi. So just remember that this... In Ruth 1, we have the tragedy of all of that, and then the commitment of Ruth, that Naomi, being emptied, comes back, but with the commitment of her daughter-in-law, is just so exemplary and encouraging in the midst of all of that. In Ruth chapter 2, we have the plot thickens, and the coincidence that, of course, Ruth goes out, takes courage as a woman to go and glean, but finds security and finds provision in the house of Boaz. And then, of course, Naomi puts the puzzle pieces together and says, this isn't just a kind man, this is one of our relatives. Just kind of setting the stage for what we're going to study tonight. And of course, Boaz, as he's introduced in chapter 2, is just exemplary in his kindness to this foreigner, this woman from Moab. Again, usually one of Israel's enemies, but Boaz going kind of against what you might expect, shows kindness to her and, of course, opens the door for the events of chapters 3 and 4. So let's get into Ruth chapter 3 tonight as we go. And I've entitled the lesson tonight, Courage and Integrity, and we'll see how this goes how this comes into play as we read. If you'll read with me, Ruth chapter 3, verses 1 through 5. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? Now is not Boaz our kinsman, with whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. It shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do. She said to her, all that you say, I will do. And this has probably got to be one of the weirder parts of the book of Ruth, but this is really where everything comes together. Is Naomi has this plan. She's looking out for Ruth, much in the same way that Ruth had been looking out for her. Ruth, remember, was the one who clung to Naomi and made sure that she would have somebody to take care of her, as all of her immediate family had passed away or was going back to Moab. And Ruth was also the one taking the initiative in chapter 2 to say, hey, I'm going to go out and glean and see if I can, you know, bring in some food so that we can make it as they're recovering from the famine and all of that. So Naomi now is saying, listen, you know, that was kind of her plan for Ruth and Orpah originally. Remember, you said, you go back to your own land so you can find a husband and you can settle down and have security and have a life again. And now Naomi still has that in mind. And what Ruth has done for her, I think Naomi is in some way trying to seek to be a blessing to Ruth and making this plan for her and trying to connect them back with their Redeemer. So everything is kind of in place for this to happen. They found another redeemer. That Boaz just needs to be made aware of these things and then to act on them. And so this is Naomi's plan, is for Ruth to go. And I think the idea here, it can seem a little bit scandalous, but I think the idea that Naomi has is for this to be a private encounter. And this would be about the only way that she could be just her and Boaz, so that she could inform him of, hey, your redeemer, will you fulfill the role of a redeemer for our family? So I think that's the idea of going to him as he's on the threshing floor. And I think the idea of him sleeping there at the foot of the... we'll talk about that in just a minute. So let's read 6 through 13 together as Ruth executes this plan. 6 through 13. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. And she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. It happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled and bent forward. And behold, a woman was lying at his feet. He said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative." Then he said, "May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. Now, it is true that I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Remain this night, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you, good, let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you, as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning." So Ruth follows through with the plans that Naomi has for her, approaches the threshing floor. I think the idea of Boaz laying down at the end of the heap of grain, it may be that this was customary in those times. If you're out working during the harvest season, it's the barley harvest, you remember, as they come back to Bethlehem, that the workers would just sleep there kind of on site. And that's why Boaz is not back at home, but he's there, has eaten and drunk and gone to sleep. And so Ruth has the opportunity to approach him privately, uncovers his feet. I think just the idea of he'll wake up, he'll get cold and wake up. And so as anyone would be, he wakes up and is surprised to find there's somebody here. there's a woman at the foot of my bed. He is startled by this. And so Ruth immediately says, "It's me, it's Ruth." And asks him, and this is interesting, if you look there in verse 9, "I am Ruth, your maid." So the New American Standard has, "So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative." I actually really don't like the New American Standard translation of this. The ESV, I believe, has, "Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." So the same kind of idea, the Hebrew word, I'm not a Hebrew scholar, but the idea, I think, is it can either mean the fold of a garment or it can mean wings. I'm inclined to think the idea here is, say, spread your wings over your servant, because we've already seen that image in the book of Ruth, haven't we? Back up with me to Ruth chapter 2. And remember Boaz, when he is showing this above and beyond kindness for Ruth, and essentially kind of his prayer wish for Ruth, if you'll remember, back in chapter 2 and verse 12, after he's told her, "I've heard about you, Ruth, and all that you've done for your mother-in-law, and how you left your land to come to a place you didn't know." So Ruth chapter 2 and verse 12, Boaz says, "May the Lord reward your work, and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge." So I think the idea here is you see this image in the Psalms and things like that too, where you take refuge in under the Lord's wing. I think Jesus even uses this image when he says, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you know how I wanted to gather you as chicks under my wing, but you wouldn't," essentially. The idea is one of provision and protection. And so it's interesting here that Boaz has wished this, prayed this for Ruth, and now Ruth is asking that Boaz would be the one to spread his wing over her and protect her in this way. I also think it's just interesting as we see Ruth coming to the threshing floor in this way, this took a lot of courage. And it's kind of the plan of someone else, but Ruth is the one to execute it. I think it reminds us a little bit of Mordecai and Esther at that moment when we studied Esther a few months back. And that moment of, you know, this is what you've got to do in order for all this to come together. And so Esther, in that sense, took courage and did it. Here, Ruth takes courage, takes this risk, and does this. And so Boaz, as he accepts this, essentially, is going to, in a sense, be the answer to his own prayer, which is kind of an interesting thing to think about, as Boaz has wished that things would go well for Ruth and that the Lord would bless her and protect her, and now he is given the opportunity to do that very thing for Ruth. And we might just think about in our own prayers. Sometimes we pray for somebody else that they might have what they need or that they might be blessed, whether it's somebody who's physically sick or whether it's somebody who is in a difficult spiritual situation. And to think about how sometimes we might could be the answer to those prayers. And that we're not just praying for them to be warmed and filled, but that we follow through. And if we're praying for them, if there's something we can do, then do that. Boaz, I think the idea here is he knew about Ruth, that she was a woman of excellence. He says here at the end of verse 11, which that also is translated a worthy woman. It's the same word that's used about Boaz at the beginning of chapter 2, where it says he's a worthy man of the tribe of Elimelech. So a worthy man and a worthy woman. These are the two places in Ruth that you find those terms used. But I think the idea is Boaz knew enough about Ruth to know the character of woman she was, but Boaz had to be kind of clued in that, hey, you're in this position to be able to provide. That Boaz hadn't maybe put all of that together or didn't maybe know he was the closest redeemer, because once he kind of gets that signal, there's a snag in the plans. And so up to this point, things seem to be going so well. But Ruth has put herself out there. Boaz says that he's willing, but then you can almost hear the record scratch in the background. And verse 12, when he's like, it's true that I am a close relative or a redeemer. However, there's somebody else. There's a closer redeemer than I. And I think just what we see in Boaz here is Boaz's integrity on several different levels. One, he's, you know, here, it's nighttime, a woman comes to where he's sleeping, and his intention is not to take advantage of that situation in any way. He's like, well, who are you? What's going on? And you just, again, you see the kind of man that Boaz is revealed in this situation. But you also see Boaz's commitment to the ways of the Lord. In Deuteronomy 25, 5 through 10, we have the provisions for levirate marriage. That was the system in which, you know, if a man dies, it's the next closest relative responsibility to raise up offspring for his brother. And Boaz, I mean, could have said, well, this is great. Again, we don't know if Boaz at this point is single. We don't read about any other women in Boaz's life. Or what exactly this is, but we know that this would be something that Boaz wanted to do, was to redeem her, but that he says, I'm not going to do that, because there is someone closer, and they've kind of got first dibs. We need to go by the protocol here and follow the way that the Lord would want us to do this. And so I just think that speaks so highly of Boaz in this kind of a situation, where the thing that Boaz is worried about is making sure that God's will is followed, whatever his other preferences may have been in the situation. And so at the end of chapter 3, we have Boaz's continued provision for Ruth and Naomi. So she lay at his feet until morning and rose before one could recognize another. And he said, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. Again he said, give me the cloak that is on you and hold it. So she held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. Then she went into the city. When she came to her mother-in-law, she said, how did it go, my daughter? And she told her all the man had done for her. She said, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said, do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Then she said, wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has settled it today. And again, we see the kind of man that Boaz is in the way that Naomi reacts to this. And Naomi, I'm sure, has just been, you know, waiting anxiously to hear how this whole plan goes and to see how Boaz would react to this. And so she comes back, and again, bearing more food, more provision for them. Boaz had already given them a month's worth of food before. And so I'm sure encouraging, you know, here's you know, six more measures of barley. And then her saying, listen, I know the kind of man that Boaz is, and he's not going to wait around about this. He is going to get right on it and settle the matter today. And again, that's just something else about the integrity and the character of Boaz was such that he was, if he knew something good to do, he wasn't going to, kind of like we talked about this morning, you know, well, that I guess I need to take care of that at some point. I guess I need to work on that. But he makes the decision, okay, here's what's going to happen. You know, what needs to happen is either this other redeemer will take care of things, but if he declines, I'm on it. And so we see his responsibility here, which is, again, just another helpful example of male character and leadership as we go through this. So at the end of chapter 3, things are still really on a cliffhanger. We don't know exactly what's going to happen, what this other man is going to do. If he does say yes, you know, is he going to take care of her in the way that we know Boaz would? Is he going to decline? What's going to happen here in the plans? Again, just trying to read this for the first time, it's like still kind of a cliffhanger. So that brings us into chapter 4 as we read the sacrifice and blessing. Ruth chapter 4, let's read verses 1 through 6. Now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there, and behold, the close relative of whom Boaz spoke was passing by. So he said, "Turn aside, friend. Sit down here." And he turned aside and sat down. He took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, "Sit down here." So they sat down. Then he said to the closest relative, "Naomi, who has come back from the land of Moab, has to sell the piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. So I thought to inform you, saying, buy it before those who are sitting here and before the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if not, tell me that I may know. For there is no one but you to redeem it, then I am after you." And he said, "I will redeem it." Then Boaz said, "On the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also acquire Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of the deceased, in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance." The closest relative said, "I cannot redeem it for myself, because I would jeopardize my own inheritance. Redeem it for yourself. You may have my right of redemption, for I cannot redeem it." So I think we see some similar patterns in the way that Boaz approaches this relative, as we've seen in other places. You remember in the book of Esther, where there were times where you'd tell the story, and then right at the end, you get kind of the detail that puts a twist on it. And Boaz does something similar here, is he presents kind of everything else to this relative, saying, "Hey, there's this land. If you want to redeem it, you've got first dibs. If you don't want it, I'll take it." But of course, man, that sounds good, because there's no strings attached initially, that you're just the one that this kind of falls to. If you redeem it, it's yours. But then after the relative says, "Yes, I'll redeem it," and you're all like, "Oh no." And it's like, well, there is another catch, if you will, that if you redeem this land, you get with it Ruth the Moabitess. And I think the idea here is that if you were to redeem it, you're taking responsibility for raising a family and providing for them, but you're not getting that as part of your own inheritance. You're having to kind of spread yourself more thinly, your resources and what's going to go to your posterity, but you're taking it on in the name of someone else. That's not going to ultimately belong to you, the investment that you're making in this other family. And so this was a situation in which suddenly the close relative realizes, this is a big sacrifice. If I take this on, I'm jeopardizing my own inheritance by taking on Ruth the Moabitess and providing for her. And so we end up in a situation where this is really similar to like what happens at the beginning of the book of Ruth. You remember when Naomi says, "Listen, Orpah, Ruth, you guys go home, find husbands for yourselves, settle down, you know, get all of that taken care of." And Orpah does really the reasonable thing in saying, "Okay, I'm going to head on back." But Orpah's decision highlights the fact that Ruth is willing to put herself out there and to follow her mother-in-law back to Israel, where she doesn't really know anybody and is just really trusting the Lord, seeking refuge under His wings in doing that. So in the same way here, this really this close relative, which is kind of interesting, that we don't even know his name. His name is never mentioned in the book of Ruth. And I think part of the idea is that what he does here makes sense in some ways, but it also ends up being kind of a shameful thing. When we read like Deuteronomy 25 and the whole taking his sandal off and spitting in his face and some of those things. But here, his decision to not redeem Ruth forms a contrast to Boaz's willingness and even just almost his joy in even making that sacrifice to take care of Ruth, this foreigner, and her family after all the tragedy that has happened to them. So I think, again, we just see Boaz's character shining so much because we see what someone else in Boaz's shoes could have done. This other close relative has the opportunity to do this, recognizes the cost, and balks. Whereas Boaz says, I recognize how much this is going to cost me, and I'm willing to redeem Ruth. Just a powerful picture for us, and a powerful example of what Christ does for us. And so in verses 7 through 12, we have the proceedings as the relative has declined. Verses 7 through 12. Now, this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning the redemption and the exchange of land to confirm any matter. A man removed his sandal and gave it to another. And this was the manner of attestation in Israel. So the closest relative said to Boaz, "Buy it for yourself." And he removed his sandal. Then Boaz said to the elders and all the people, "You are witnesses today that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech, and all that belonged to Chilion and Mahlon. Moreover, I have acquired Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, to be my wife, in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance, so that the name of the deceased will not be cut off from his brothers or from the court of his birthplace. You are witnesses today." All the people who were in the court and the elders said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, both of whom built the house of Israel. And may you achieve wealth in Ephrathah and become famous in Bethlehem. Moreover, may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, through the offspring which the Lord will give you by this young woman." So the proceedings go forth, and again, it's kind of an unusual thing in the book of Ruth, this exchanging of the sandal. There may be some vestiges of Deuteronomy 29 there, where the idea of when this man is unwilling to do that, one of the things in Deuteronomy 25 is you take the sandal off the guy, spit in his face, because it's a shameful thing. You're not willing to do for your relative what the Lord wanted to happen. So there was provision made for there to be a substitute, if you will, another redeemer to come in and perform that role. But it's interesting that that passage concludes with the idea that this guy will always be known as the man whose sandal was removed. So it's a shameful title that he would wear the rest of his time in Israel. So we have the exchanging of the sandal. Again, I'm not sure this isn't exactly the same situation because it explains that this happened in a broader context that kind of in their business transactions in those days, this was the way to show, hey, what was mine is yours. And handing them the sandal and just making it firm. And of course, this is happening at the gate where the men of the city would gather to make decisions and the elders of the city would be. And you have, again, the proper protocol. You have the witnesses here saying, hey, we're all witness to this. This is legitimate. This is all happening as it should happen. So they get the proper documentation for this transaction. And the witnesses here are joyful at what's happening as well. Again, to people who are bystanders to the situation who hear, wow, is this Naomi? You know, they're marveling at the end of chapter 1. And now hearing about, wow, this Moabitess of all people is committed to Ruth. And now here's Boaz going out on a limb and taking Ruth for himself. This is just an amazing story of commitment and kindness. And so they're kind of overjoyed here and are issuing kind of this threefold blessing, if you will, using some of the historical things from the nation of Israel. May the Lord make this woman like Rachel and Leah, which, I mean, I'm assuming they're imposing the good parts of that family on this, because that was kind of a mess. But saying, basically, may you be fruitful and multiply. May you be able to have lots of children, like Rachel and Leah, who built up the tribes of Israel, or the house of Israel. May you achieve wealth and fame in Ephrathah, Bethlehem, again, the same area there. And may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore. And I think the idea is the house of Perez, of course, is specifically of the sons of Israel. The one after Judah has the son Perez, which again, kind of a scandalous situation how that happened. But the Lord uses this to establish the lineage of David. And of course, that's exactly what's going to happen here, because Boaz and Ruth are going to enter into the very lineage of David the king at the end of this book. So kind of this threefold blessing of being like Rachel and Leah, being famous and wealthy, and being like the house of Perez. They're really excited and rejoicing with those who rejoice. So we come to the end of the book of Ruth, verses 13 through 22. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And he went into her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, "Blessed is the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer today. May his name become famous in Israel. May he also be to you a restorer of life and a sustainer of your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and is better to you than seven sons, has given birth to him." Then Naomi took the child and laid him in her lap and became his nurse. The neighbor women gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." So they named him Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now these are the generations of Perez. To Perez was born Hezron, and to Hezron was born Ram, and to Ram Amminadab, and to Amminadab was born Nahshon, and to Nahshon Salmon, and to Salmon was born Boaz, and to Boaz Obed, and to Obed was born Jesse, and to Jesse David. So the book ends with, of course, the forward direction that this whole book is just showing this helpless, hopeless situation, and God pulls it all together by his providence and by Boaz's kindness and Ruth's commitment, and all these things come together to form the family of the greatest king, really, that Israel would ever have, and of course a shadow of the Messiah. I love what the women say to Naomi here at the end of the book. Well, first of all, we just see that the children are a blessing from the Lord. There's so many times where it talks about the Lord enabling those to conceive. And that just children are a blessing from God. And this statement in verse 14, I really think that this kind of gets at the heart of some of the lessons of the book of Ruth. Where it says, the women said to Naomi, "Blessed is the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer today." And that really is the greatest kindness that we see in the book, is the kindness of the Lord. And his provision in the midst of impossible circumstances that seems like there's no hope left, the Lord provides a redeemer. And of course, isn't that exactly what the Lord has done for us in our helpless and hopeless situation? Blessed be the Lord who has not left us without a redeemer. In our sin and in our distance from God, coming from the nations, if you will. We were in a foreign nation serving foreign gods. But if we will come to him, be committed to him and his people, like Ruth was, the Lord provides a redeemer for those who seek him and takes care of them. They can find refuge under his wings. And of course, the greatest way that the Lord provides a true redeemer here is going to be in this child. It's interesting that the roles that they say, I think they are talking about the child, Obed, who's been born to Boaz and Ruth here. When he says, may his name become famous in Israel, may he also be to you a restorer of life and sustainer in your old age. You can just see Naomi, after all the bitterness, you know, that she went through, and wanted them to call her Mara, but now her name, Naomi, sweet, has been proven true by the Lord's help. That this child is the one taking care of her. You know, as she's aging and passing away, here's the one that the Lord provided for her to take care of her and restore life to her. And of course, ultimately, is that not what the Lord has provided for us? One who is to us a restorer of life itself, spiritually, and of course at the end, when he raises us up on the last day. So just real quick here, we've got the chart here of David will just be four generations later, after this encounter with Ruth and Boaz. And again, just so amazing to think about when you look at that family tree of Jesus, when you read Matthew chapter 1, you read Luke chapter 3, particularly in Matthew 1, the five women that are mentioned in that genealogy, do you remember? That most of them are mentioned are kind of like weird or scandalous circumstances. And here's a foreigner, committed to the Lord, but just not what you would expect to see in the lineage of Israel. But the Lord using all of these sometimes tragic situations to build the family from which all the nations on the earth would be blessed. We serve an awesome God who's able to work in even the most hopeless situations. And so just at the end, of course, the Lord is providing a blessing for all men, not just Naomi and Ruth, but providing for all of mankind in this blessing. It really is remarkable when you look at the number of times in Scripture that God takes what looks impossible and is able to draw salvation out. And again, not just for the people in that situation, but for us ourselves. I hope to, if we get a chance to do one more lesson, to kind of draw out some of the applications from the book of Ruth and to teach that. But we're going to stop our study here for tonight. And really, what we're talking about is the Lord's invitation. In Ruth, we see that Ruth was used by God in part because of her commitment. And that the Lord wants us to leave the world, to leave the things that we've been clinging to, and to cling to Him with everything that we have. Wherever He wants us to go, we will go. Whatever He wants us to do, we will do. His people will be our people, and He will be our God. And we see how the Lord has provided a Redeemer for us. In just a minute, we're going to sing Redeemed, how I love to proclaim it. And I just want to end tonight thinking about the sacrifice that Boaz made. And again, seeing how the relative, you know, it's like, oh, that's too much, I can't redeem you. But how Boaz was so willing and even joyful to make that sacrifice. And to think about the price that was paid to redeem you and me. And how willingly Jesus made that sacrifice. And the Father gave His Son to be that sacrifice. We're not redeemed with perishable things like silver or gold, but the precious blood of God's own Son. And if that's not compelling to you, I don't know what will be. So as we think about Boaz's sacrifice, as we think about what God has done for us, and how much He sacrificed for us to be committed to Him, if there's any way we can help you to be committed to the Lord, please come to the front while we stand and sing.